It's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. And if you were hearing my various promotions in the last day, you've heard me mention a segment that we're actually not going to be airing on the show today that got canceled. However, we'll be spending the hour with a Zimbabwe-born dancer, choreographer, actor named Nora Chipalmire. She is in residence at the Krannert Art Museum on the University of Illinois campus in Champaign. The guest of curator Tumelo Mosaka. Both of us actually will be with us on the show today. We'll be hearing a lot about her work, the philosophy, a bit about the program at the Krannert Art Museum, and some of the music that she'll include in her live performance, public performance, tomorrow night at the museum at 7 o'clock. It follows a film called Nora. She's the subject of that dance film. That will be shown tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock at the museum. And that's all free. She's in residence giving various classes, and that's the one public performance event. Again, it's tomorrow night at the Krannert Art Museum, and this is Live and Local. Here's one of the pieces that will be included in her performance tomorrow night. Sam Cooke, Bring It On Home to Me, on Live and Local. My guest on Live and Local today is Nora Chipalmire, who is as she described here, a self-exiled artist born in Zimbabwe, now living in New York, or based in New York anyway. She is in residence at the University of Illinois, specifically at the Krannert Art Museum as part of their Open Studio program. Artist in residence this week with participating in various classes, and for the purpose of this discussion, she is going to be giving a performance tomorrow night, and also there will be a film screening that of a film that is actually bears her name, Nora, for I'm sure very good reason that we'll hear about a little bit. And she's the guest of Tumelo Mosaka, who is coordinator of the Open Studio Program?
Curator.
I guess if it's a museum, then that's the term one uses there. Let me ask you first, Tumelo, what attracted you to Nora? How did you hear about her, and what made you decide to bring her here?
I guess it goes back to just thinking about the whole program in terms of what I wanted to do with the program. And my intention, well, my inspiration really came from thinking about the contemporary arts festivals that used to happen here at the University of Illinois.
Used to happen.
Yes, used to happen. And and especially given that this was our 50th anniversary, we were looking to celebrate the arts. And so my sort of approach to this my approach to marking this anniversary was to think about how to incorporate different arts into the museum in terms of making it a much more holistic experience, maybe different to how it used to happen before in the 60s and 70s. But I wanted to give a sense that, you know, the museum, even though it is a repository of arts and culture, but it can also be an engine of initiating or generating new ideas. And so I was a little familiar with Nora's work from living in New York, and was always very much interested in how she was thinking about, you know, her craft. And having this opportunity here and thinking about how I could further sort of, you know, use the space of the museum as this laboratory where different artists could come in and actually engage not only their craft, but also think about the environment in which they're working in, and how the art on the walls can also somehow have an influence in terms of their artistic production. And I was really inspired by what Nora's thinking and her sort of approach to art making, and I felt that she was a really great candidate for me to engage in terms of thinking about her ideas about identity, her craft in terms of thinking about how it relates to place and space. And I started to have a conversation with her manager and her about, you know, where she was with her, what she was doing, and thinking about how she could possibly engage our students here and, you know, share her experiences with the community.
The Open Studio program, is that was that specifically thought up for the 50th anniversary?
Yes, this was a specific program for the 50th anniversary. It was something that I felt, you know, would not so much replace the arts festivals, but rather kind of, you know, mark this, you know, energy that was once upon a time present here at the university. In fact, I think it was also a festival that, especially for the museum, helped grow the collection. We were able to acquire a lot of our work during those festivals that happened here. And so, you know, I think for us, you know, marking this 50th anniversary was not only about just showing the visual arts, but really sort of trying to embrace all the different arts. In this case, you know, the performative and aspect became a very sort of potent creative. It became a very sort of central feature of the Open Studio program, because I wanted people to feel that the space was not only fixed, but it was constantly changing with different artists coming in to create work, to engage with the space. And, you know, Nora is the second international artist we've brought through. And we continue to have local artists, faculty members, students participate in our Open Studio throughout the whole program.
And are you here yourself? Are you here specifically for this program?
Oh,
no.
Have
you been here for a while?
I've been here now 2 years. So I'm
at the Art Museum?
At the Art Museum.
Yeah. And what is your general role there?
I'm a curator of contemporary art.
Okay. And the exhibits do change quite a lot over there, at least the configuration of them does.
Yes. We change them every, three times a year, but I think at each interval there's at least 5-6 exhibitions opening. So, you know, I think it's a very intensive program, and something that we're constantly thinking about in terms of how do we continue to remain relevant and vibrant so that our audience grows.
This is a space that I'm still remarkably unfamiliar with. I've been in there quite a number of times, particularly for what WILL used to sponsor, which we called our Second Sunday Concerts, where we had them in the galleries at the Crandon Art Museum. And I was surprised at one point to read, if I'm remembering right, that the museum is the second largest art museum in Illinois south of Chicago, or the first largest south of Chicago. Or something like that.
You know, I've heard that too.
You're not going to corroborate that.
Yeah, I'm still new to the Midwest and have not really explored extensively. So I would reserve my judgment on that, but I have read that too somewhere.
Well, if you've read that, then that's probably right. We just go with what we read. You don't have to go to all the art museums in the state of Illinois and make a personal judgment, right?
No, definitely, yeah.
But I guess my real point in that is that it's quite an extensive collection. I haven't seen all of it by any means. And I know that there are also concerts that show up there. You have a
yes.
series called the Sudden Sound Concerts, which focus on especially on contemporary jazz and improvisation and things.
Yeah, yeah.
But other performance elements that are frequently happening there.
No, absolutely. I think we try to be more inclusive in terms of how we, you know, we're thinking about incorporating different artistic expressions as part of sort of the culture of the museum. And I think part of it has to do with, you know, understanding that, you know, more and more people, you know, the way they receive information is not one-dimensional. And that we need to consider, you know, how we can expand our palette in terms of providing different kinds of experiential opportunities. And so this is just one other way in which we're sort of investigating and exploring.
I'm talking with Tumelo Mosaka, who is a curator for the Open Studio Program, the Artist in Residence Program at the Canada Art Museum. And this is all by way of introduction to our extra special guest for the show, who is the artist who is in residence this week, is Noro Chipaumire. And before I sort of start directing questions to her, one more for you, Tumelo, at least for now. Did you or the museum configure the space specifically for her appearance?
Well, what we did was we configured the space to be flexible enough to be occupied by different kinds of artistic presentations. And so in this case, and basically what we did was we emptied out one of our galleries to allow us to have the freedom to, change it in ways that are suitable for different artists who are coming through. And so in this case, one half of the gallery has a sculpture by an artist out of Chicago by the name of Juan Chavez. And it's a piece that also acts as a performance platform where artists can perform inside. And then the other half of the gallery is really open to different kinds of configurations. And so Nora has been working there for the last couple of days trying to figure out how she would want to, own the space. And so I think that way it has allowed us to sort of respond to artistic needs and, and also to think about how we could better, use the space in the future when we do have such events, when artists come through the space. I mean, again, this is a new direction we're taking, and I think something that we would continue to think about in terms of, expanding it in years to come.
So the space that she's going to be performing in tomorrow night, mm-hmm. at the moment, has that Chavez piece and nothing else.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So it's going to be her.
It's her and the space.
Image, her and the space. So she's a semi-tall woman, but she's not really big. So her gestures and presence is going to be really big.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the beauty about the way she moves is that, the space will allow a certain kind of intimacy in which I think the viewers will feel as if they're a part of the experiential presence of Nora. So it's going to be really, very interesting. Very different.
The experiential presence of Nora. That sounds like a movie title all on its own.
Well, I feel sort of even inclined to jump in. The empty space, the empty space is theater. That's what every performance artist wants, is an empty space. And then you step into it and you make it yours.
Well, and you probably have been described as a dancer, but performance artist is more the correct term, I guess, for you.
I would accept the term dancer with a lot of pride, yes. But I don't want to be limited to just that concept, because I my work does broaden out to even spoken word. I believe that even an ability to act, to sing, is part of how the body expresses itself. And the traditional idea of what a dancer is someone who does not speak, who doesn't emit sounds, and who just dances sort of beautifully, elusively, at a distance.
But you're not one of those kind of people.
No, I would say I'm thoroughly in your face kind of person.
Well, I'm actually looking at your artistic statement. Do you have your artist statement memorized?
No, I do not. And it has changed over several years. So.
I was going to read it, but as I'm reading it, I'm thinking, this has somebody else's voice. Would you mind reading it?
Oh,
it's okay. At the bottom of this page here, and if it's changed from that, feel free to Improvise.
Okay, my goal is to move people to action. My work is about people. My work is total propaganda, unapologetic and agitations for human rights. My work is township, it is urban, it is now. It is not about that colonial, post-colonial, geopolitical Africa. It is about African people agitating for fair trade, not aid. I would say that's pretty, I stand by that.
Okay. And, you know, I said at the outset that you are self-exiled artist born in Zimbabwe. Why did you exile yourself?
Well, for various reasons, mostly to do with personal and artistic. It is not easy for a woman to be practicing contemporary dance in Zimbabwe, especially right now, because there is not a vast tradition of contemporary dance, and therefore the audience and the ecosystem to support that livelihood, the sustaining oneself in the arts is particularly challenging. And then there's also just a question of the political environment that one has to protest. And so for those reasons, I decided that it would be perhaps better for me to stay outside of Zimbabwe to pursue both my artistic intentions, possibilities, as well as, you know, to voice my utter dejection at the political and economic climate.
What is the political climate in Zimbabwe?
Well, without sounding like CNN, it is it is Zimbabwe has been experiencing you know, major challenges politically. You know, the whole broadening of democracy and what people think about that, people's participation in self-governance, as well as sort of this huge calamitous collapse of the economy, which has been sort of in free fall since perhaps 2000, is maybe sort of reaching a point of stabilization right now. But Zimbabwe is one of those places that has experienced something that other countries perhaps haven't in many decades, which is just a complete collapse of the economy.
What was the cause of it? What has been the cause of it?
I would
big
question, of course, but many issues, many issues. Some of it has to do with I would say a lot of it has to do with the history of Zimbabwe, the wars of revolution, the change from Rhodesia to Zimbabwe. And also the question about land, the ownership of land, and what have been some of the solutions to resolve the questions around land.
So how, with your art, are you able to address this, or do you try to address this?
I don't necessarily try to address the bigger issues about land ownership and all who should be in power. What I do address is how it feels to be someone who grew up in this place, in this country called Zimbabwe, who has family there and who's living away from that current situation. What does it feel like to understand that, you know, my mother has to stand in line for a piece of bread for maybe 5-6 hours in any given day? That's those sort of things are interesting to me, and that's how I can only respond in my work to the political or economic situation is from a very, very personal point of view.
Do you ever go back there?
I have. I don't go back as often as I would like to because it is very difficult.
And do you go, when you go, do you have any opportunity to perform?
I have performed in Zimbabwe, yes, I have.
And how are your performances received?
I have actually been able to perform as part of a group, and the work was sort of kind of beautiful dance, not political at all, and it was well received, I have to say. My own personal work, I have not performed it in Zimbabwe, and I am not sure how it would be received. Given that there is a lot of censorship around, you know, music, around, you know, the creative arts.
When you have performed, who have you performed for?
For just general public, you know, there aren't many venues either for dance. It's not like in the West where there's a concert stage where people know they're going to watch dance, and there's a proscenium stage, and you sit. I actually did several performances that were sort of out in the public, like in the townships and just in open space, and vast mounds of people show up, children, adults.
Did they show up because they knew you were coming, or because they heard you were there?
Both. And that also, it is very easy for a group to gather very quickly if there's something happening.
I have this image that is probably incredibly stereotypical of somebody beating the drums, you know, that says, oh, somebody's here, so we communicate. But that could be other African nations, for all I know, that how that
Well, that
works.
Doesn't quite happen in most of urban Africa anymore. People just put on a sound system and, you know, it's sort of loud. And or there's a makeshift stage. Everybody assumes something is going to happen. And, you know.
Sound travels.
Sound travels, yes.
Well, speaking of sound, first let me reintroduce our guests. Nora Chipalmire is artist in residence at the University of Illinois this week at the Krannert Art Museum, guest of or invited by the curator who's with us, Tumelo Mosaka. And you've so far given some classes?
Yes,
participated
I have.
In class? Are you giving classes or participating in other people's classes?
I actually am giving classes. I am facilitating or leading the classes. I have been very fortunate to have the students from the dance department come to the Krannert Art Museum to be inside of the space that I'm working in, and take class there. So it's actually been it's been fascinating in that it's not an ordinary thing to walk into a museum and see a dance class in process. So I think there have been some people coming to just you know, see the artwork in the museum, and lo and behold, there is a dance class in process. And so I have been able to teach class there that are just technique class, just an ordinary technique class, but also composition classes. But I'm there as much as possible, so working or rehearsing the performance that I'm going to do. And during those times where I'm just the solitary figure moving in the space, you know, so there have been a lot of traffic in and out of the museum, just people curious. They hear music, often loud. And so people are sort of inspired to stand and watch and witness and see what's happening.
Because after all, it is a museum, and people do go there to see stuff, and then they'll be drawn, just like you described.
Right.
If you go back to Zimbabwe, people figure out something's going on.
Something
that isn't
is going
normal.
On, and it's actually it's a moving art.
Right. Well, literally so, and you can. You can go see this moving art tomorrow night, actually beginning with a film screening of a movie called Nora. That's at 6 o'clock tomorrow night at the Krannert Art Museum. Her performance starts at 7 o'clock, and then there will be a gallery conversation at 8:15 with her and with one of the film creators, film directors. You just mentioned music. And I think maybe we should hear a little bit. And this is, you brought some music that is, you're going to use in the performance tomorrow night.
Yes, yes.
What have we got first? And maybe we can, after you introduce it, hear a little bit, and then as it goes along, maybe talk a little bit about what people might see.
Okay.
Or at least what you were thinking about.
Well, you started off by asking me about Zimbabwe. I would say a lot of my work is about trying to discuss this place and my feelings about it. And one of the ways I try to do that is to use music that is off Zimbabwe. So the first song that we're going to hear is by Thomas Mafumo and the Blacks Unlimited, who I've actually just finished a two-year-long tour with, a performance of another piece. Thomas Mafumo and the Blacks Unlimited are legends in Zimbabwe, musicians that have been crowned the Lions of Zimbabwe. And this particular song is called Shumba. Shumba means lion. And it's a very popular song. I think if it's played instinctively, you want to dance. And most Zimbabweans understand it as a celebration of just, the beauty, the strength of the people of Zimbabwe. The dance is very abstract, I would say. Most people, some of the issues that I have to live with is that as an African woman who's doing contemporary work, I am often asked to explain why it's not obviously African dance. And then I have to ask what African dance is.
Well, I was just going to ask you that.
Well, you know, I do contemporary dance, and, I say I'm from Zimbabwe, and the assumption is that the dance is going to be traditional Zimbabwean dance or traditional African dance. And yet I would say, if you're thinking close to Merce Cunningham or Tricia Brown or Pina Bausch, or then you begin to get closer to how I'm thinking about what movement is and what dance is, without denying that, of course, physically I understand very much what Africa and the multiplicity of rhythms that are inherent in the body.
So this is music by Thomas Mafumo.
And the Blacks Unlimited.
And the name of the tune again?
Shumba.
And we're talking with Nora Chipalmire, who's going to be dancing to this music tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Cranard Art Museum. This is Live and Local.
So the music is absolutely dance music, and the piece that I use this music in is called Chimurenga. It's an evening length piece, an hour long, that is. Chimurenga means revolution. It also means to cry. I made the piece maybe in 2005, or between 2003 and 2005, because I was also trying to find ways to talk about what it felt like to grow up during a revolution. And the music of Thomas Mafumo is also known as Chimurenga music, revolution music. And so it seemed rather appropriate that I would use this music to talk about my memories of having grown up during the armed revolution in Zimbabwe, which overthrew the government of Ian Smith, which was then Rhodesia. Yeah.
You described it as dance music. Is the music that he's playing, is it in some sense traditional, or is it
The music, not? The Thomas Mofumo's music, or Chimurenga music, is fascinating, very much so in that it is steeped in a traditional idea, but it is urban music. It is not traditional music. What Thomas Mofumo and people of his generation and some other musicians across Africa, like Franco in Congo, were able to do was to take a very traditional bass idea and transform it onto Western instruments and then create this very urban sound, a contemporary sound. So in some ways, if you're a Zimbabwean in Shona, you hear the traditional rhythms, you hear the mbira in the music, but you're also listening to guitars and drums, and it's the sound has been transformed from a sacred music, just solely on the mbira, to a circular music that is about actually protest and about dance. I think musicians of his era were very courageous in creating a sound that seemed to be only dance and upbeat and light, yet the words, the lyrics, what the message was about protest, was about uprising, was about resistance. And so it was a way that music was used as a tool against colonialism, as a tool of resistance, that if you were not Shona speaking, you didn't understand what the words meant, but you understood that it was a happy sound for dance, and you saw the Africans dancing to it, so it seemed pretty innocuous dance music.
Well, that's how it sounds to me. You know,
yes.
I'm thinking, oh, it just sounds like a lot of fun. And, listening to various types of music from around the world where I don't understand the language, I've sort of had a mixed reaction of wanting to know what they were singing, but not wanting to know what they're singing, because it's the sound of the voice,
right,
is in itself, to my ears, like another instrument,
right.
With another unspoken voice, but of course that the message would be known to somebody who speaks Shona.
Right.
You said that before we heard that music that you are a modern dancer, and then people are surprised that they don't find you dancing traditionally in some way. Do you nonetheless incorporate elements of traditional dance in your performances, in your choreography?
Absolutely, but it's already abstracted. It's already transformed the traditional movements that I do incorporate. The traditional movement of the way the body moves traditionally is a part of me. It's in me. It's sort of my first language. And because I'm making work that I also want people like my grandmother to understand, I have to make it accessible. So I'm not just interested in making modern dance or completely abstract work that becomes inaccessible to people who come from my background or people who are not as educated in the contemporary art forms and the modern art forms as such. You know, so I'm interested in how I can marry my dual culture-ness. You know, if you grew up during my era in Zimbabwe, you are of two cultures. You know the traditional Shona, because that's just how we were raised in our African townships, in our African schools, in our homes where we spoke Shona and we observed all the traditions, you know, whether it's family and how we deal with all kinds of rituals. But outside of our homes, we also were exposed to, you know, English and this whole idea of what it means to have a British education. You know, my whole entire education was British, you know, because Zimbabwe was a British colony. So there was always this dual cultures. We knew how the white Europeans lived and wanted us to live. We learned those ways. At the same time, we also retained our Shonaness, our traditions. So for me, I think as a contemporary dance maker, I'm interested in always conversing between these two places, and then hopefully finding a third place, a middle ground, where those two, the traditional, the Shona and the European, have been transformed into another thing, into a third thing. So yes, I do access very much the ideas of how does the African body, what is that aesthetic? But I also know very much what is the aesthetic of the European. But in between those two things are who I am.
How old were you when you left Zimbabwe?
I was 23.
23. And what was the stage of development of the country at that point? Meaning, you know, the transition between, I mean, I don't remember the history. It seems like most of the time I've been alive, it's been Zimbabwe, but I have such a skewed sense of time. It could have been, you know, a few years ago.
Well, you know, Zimbabwe became independent in 1980.
So it was much more recent than I'm remembering.
So, and when I left at the end of 1990, the country was the example, the prime example of how one could shift from a revolution to a very successful, stable, country economy. I mean, there had been, I think, many expectations that the Marxist communist regime of Robert Mugabe and all the freedom fighters that were taking over the country were going to take the country towards some direction that wasn't going to be a happy thing for the free world, let's say. But then that didn't happen, and that Zimbabwe was a success story up to until, I guess, 2000, when the economy started to really go into this very free fall sort of place. So when I left, it was Zimbabwe was sort of as at its height of success as a country, as a new country.
But it was still problematic for an artist.
Still problematic. I actually have to say that I had no art education in Zimbabwe. There was no possibility for an African child, and from my class anyway, to have had an art education. So I went to the University of Zimbabwe. I studied law. I knew there was something in me. I'd always been a very creative child, but there was no outlet for that. There had never been a possibility for me to have an outlet of that was creative. You
so
know.
From your class, what was your class?
A single mother, working class. We were not wealthy, so there were no extracurricular activities that included dance classes. Or music classes or art classes of that kind. So, you know, my whole education was purely academic. If any other extra stuff was probably sports, which is running back and forth to school.
My guest on Live and Local is Nora Chipalmire. I keep trying to put your last name into your first name. who is in residence at the Cranitt Art Museum on the University of Illinois campus this week. She's going to be performing tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the museum following a screening of a film for which she is the subject. It's called Nora. That's at 6 o'clock, and then there's a gallery conversation at 8:15. And you're listening to Live and Local here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Let's hear a little bit more of the music that will be part of the performance tomorrow, and then other questions will ensue.
Yeah, maybe I would say so. One piece that I will do is this excerpt from Chimurenga with this music by Thomas Mufumo and the Blacks Unlimited. But another, I'm doing a more complete piece, which is called Dark Swan. The Dark Swan is my reading or my re-representation of all the swans that are typical in Western aesthetics and ballet and, you know, Western thinking about dance. I was inspired by the dying swan. It's the dying swan, the dark swan. So the music that we're going to hear is the swan, which was composed by Camille Saint-Saëns. I think this version that is the version that I use for the performance is performed by Yo-Yo Ma. Mm-hmm. I don't believe it's the same one that we're going to hear, but it's the swan.
And this is from Saint-Saëns' Carnival of the Animals.
Yes, Carnival of the Animals.
And this is not to be confused with the current film, Black Swan.
No, because I hear that often, which is why I quickly jumped in to say the dark swan, because everybody says, you're going to perform the black swan.
Very, very different, very different. Music of Saint-Saëns here with Yo-Yo Ma on Live and Local. Well, we all figured out pretty quickly that Yo-Yo Ma, the cellist, was not involved in that performance. I was just saying as we were listening to it, it's almost bizarre with those little filigrees at the end of that from the pianist. But it will be the cello version of that piece tonight with tomorrow night. With Nora Chipalmire. So the movement that is involved in that piece.
Yes. So the music, I think, is so known. And I believe, too, the dance that was initially danced by Anna Pavlova, a very famous Russian ballerina, to the choreography by Michael Fokin, also famous Russian choreographer. Is very well known. The dance is mostly bourrées, which is, you know, feet in relevé and sort of pit up and moving kind of rapidly.
Up on the toes,
on point shoes, and a lot of arms fluttering like birds. So this is essentially what the dying swan is about, you know, bourreing on point and fluttering of the arms. So I took this kind of idea and so my interpretation of it is a lot of arms as well, but certainly a different kind of bird. and also a lot of feet action, but certainly not on point. And certainly not giving an illusion of ease. My dance is actually physical, very physical, hard work. I sort of pant through it. You hear me kind of like struggling, really, through the movement. Because I had this idea that my swan was going to resist death. The dying swan is obviously on its last breath and it's dying, and we know it's dying. But what if this bird resisted death? And what if this bird was actually a savanna bird and you could feel the heat? And what if it wasn't on some glacial lake and it was actually on a footpath, on a dirt and earth, and you could see the dust rise as the feet sort of stomped the earth, you know, and sort of resisting this death. And the arms, too, are about resisting this inevitable, you know, struggling to leave. So I reread this Swan and gave it another not towards death, but towards life.
The struggle is
yes, the struggle
let's say
for
that
life.
Footpath, let's say that footpath could perhaps be in Zimbabwe.
It could be in Zimbabwe. It could be in Darfur. It could be in southern Sudan. It could be in Congo. It could be in Egypt. It could be in Tunisia. It could be anywhere. But to the heat and the earth, it's definitely an African locale, and I like that because also. This idea of dancing on the earth, I like that very much. Outside on the earth, and you feel how your weight can be accepted by the earth, which I think is sort of fundamental to how modern dancers like Martha Graham, Doris Humphrey were thinking about how to give the body weight, as opposed to the ballet, which was how to be weightless.
I'm seeing that our time is escaping rather quickly.
Is it?
It's passed very quickly. So I realize I had better ask you
Goodness.
About this film called Nora.
Oh, yes.
That is going to be shown tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the Cranet Art Museum on the U of I campus. How did that come to be? Was this something of your intention or somebody else who knew something about you and said, I want to make a film with Nora?
The film is an art film that was a result of a mutual love and respect between myself and Ala Kovgan, who is one of the filmmakers and will be there at the Cranet Art Center tomorrow. We had met on a different project in 2004, and we were both kind of wowed by each other's thinking about art making. Ala Kovgan is a Russian, born and raised in Moscow, but based in Boston. A filmmaker who loves dance. And we had in common sort of this Marxist background, having grown up during a Marxist revolution, and she having grown up during the USSR, and how we sort of saw the world having shaped by these sort of big ideals, ideologies, and what we were doing currently with our work. We wanted to work together, and she had seen my work Chimurenga, which was this story about having grown up in Zimbabwe, and she was very, very curious to see how she and I could work together and build an art film that was a dance film. So that's sort of how we got to speaking together, and then we actually started to write a script that became this film, Nora. And somewhere along the line, another filmmaker who's has also a huge reputation, David Hinton, became involved. So there were two directors, Ala Kovgan and David Hinton, both really phenomenal human beings with huge curiosity, had never been to Africa, and were both very, very interested in how they could make a dance film. And I do believe in many ways that this is the first art film that is about dance, an African art film. So it's a landmark on its own, and it's absolutely a gorgeous film. In many ways, it is true to how I experienced family life, and just the correlation between my private life growing up in Zimbabwe and what was happening politically around that time.
Nora Chipamire will be the subject of this film. Nora, screening at 6 o'clock tomorrow. Airing, we're on the radio, so I always say air. Screening at 6 o'clock tomorrow evening at the Cranet Art Museum. She'll give a performance at 7 o'clock, And then there'll be a gallery conversation with herself and Alla Kovgan, one of the two directors of that film, at 8:15. It's all free.
Absolutely.
And this is Tumela Mosaka, who is the curator of the Crandon Art Museum's Open Studio Artist in Residence program, who has brought Nora here with us. And I think, why don't we go out with another piece of music from your performance? Give us a bit of introduction to this.
Yes. You know, we'll listen to the song, but I actually sing the song.
We should make you sing it now.
No. It's easier in performance because whatever happens is what it is.
Yeah.
Whereas outside of it is harder. It is Janis Joplin, Mercedes-Benz. Maybe we should go out with because it's sort of a reverent prayer.
Your reverent prayer?
Yes.
A reverent prayer.
Irreverent.
Your reverent prayer. They're very different, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me, for having us both.
Yes, thank you.
Tumela, yeah. And thank you for bringing her in, Tumela. And sure. The time has passed quickly, so maybe if you come back again, we'll dream up a television show and actually let people see you dance. Although, you know, your website is
chipaomire.com, and the film can be found at movementrevolutionafrica.com. The film has also been shown on some public stations in the country, and so it may be coming to your public station soon.
Maybe we can suggest it.
Yes.
Nora Chipaomire here on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
I like to do a song of great social and political import. It goes like this. Oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. Worked hard all my lifetime, no help from my friends. So, oh Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz?
Janis Joplin on Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Federal budget debates are intensifying. Funding for public broadcasting is one of the programs facing possible cuts, and that threatens programs you hear on WILL radio. Let Congress know how you feel about this. Contact information is at will.illinois.edu. Visit 170millionamericans.org to sign up to receive the latest information.
Tomorrow on Live and Local, I'll be talking with Chester Always, who is music director of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, who are giving a concert in Champaign on Saturday, and also with Dean Karras, who coordinates the Piper's Hut concert series of mostly traditional Irish music. And since tomorrow is St. Patrick's Day, I thought I'd let Dean share a few of his favorite recordings, and we'll let you know about all the St. Pat's programs we can find. Programs today on FM 90.9 are made possible by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, welcoming Russia's oldest symphonic group, the St. Petersburg Philharmonic Orchestra, for an evening of Brahms, Rimsky-Korsakov, and Shostakovich on Thursday, March 31st at 7:30 p.m. More information is at krannertcenter.com. And we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 2 to 6 p.m. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. This is Illinois Public Media, WYNL-FM, and HD1 and HD2 Urbana.